Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It is the Anfield Wrap. After Liverpool batter Manchester City by 1-0, I've got Rob Gutman, Phil Blundell, I've got Dan Austin, and I've got Paul Johnson with me. Dan Austin, what about that then?
It was brilliant, wasn't it? From start to finish, Liverpool were totally different from what they've been at the start of the season. Felt like they believed in themselves, felt like they were backing one another up, felt like they were making really sensible decisions for the whole of the 90 minutes. And the crowd, I thought was brilliant. I just really enjoyed being there, and I've predominantly enjoyed going to match this season. And you know, seeing everyone and having a football back and having it be the fabric of your social life and all that sort of stuff. But the atmospheres haven't been great. I would never sort of like slate people because it is hard when the team's not playing very well.
And also, we are in the crowd. When we say we like the crowd, that's where in it. We're part of it.
I'm including myself in there. But yesterday felt like a sort of, I don't want to use the word turning point because that feels a bit traumatic and not necessarily true, but it just felt different in so many different ways, and all of them positive, really, in that the crowd felt like they believed in the team again. And I think that's one thing that I've been a little bit frustrated about so far, is that obviously Liverpool have been playing really, really poorly for the majority of the games so far this season. But they're still the same men. They're still the same footballers that have done all the brilliant things, including very, very recently. So they hadn't just, like, a few of them hadn't just become really bad footballers over the course of the summer. They hadn't become, you know, a terrible team over the summer. And it felt a bit like it was getting a little bit kind of nasty at points with certain players in certain games. So to have it be the total opposite yesterday, where from start to finish it felt like, well, you know what, you might well get beat here by a really good team, but fuck it, let's just have a go and do the best we can, everybody in this stadium, all 55,000 of us, and see where we get. And where we got was somewhere brilliant. It was a brilliant team playing excellent football, doing all the things you would like them to do, doing some things from the past that they were excellent at, but also an awful lot of new things that weren't necessarily there last season in terms of the shape, that seemed like they were going really well. And it really did feel like a combination of team feeding off crowd and crowd feeding off team. And that to me is just the perfect match day going experience. I had a great time, and it felt like everybody else did too.
It felt like, Paul, there was just building blocks all the way through the performance. It was one of them where there's been a lot of games recently where I think we've played like, and it certainly seemed like time is the enemy. Whereas that was a game where time was on our side, and it felt like every 5 minutes, everyone believed that bit more. Mm-hmm. Us, them, you know, that's one of the things. And every 5 minutes where pretty much no one did anything daft also added to that. You know, nothing daft here for the next 10, boys, and then there was nothing daft for the next 10, and that helped massively.
That was one of the biggest positives to come from it. There was, you can't, you know, you could probably go through and maybe a couple of things that you think was a genuine mistake, but from what we'd seen so far this season, to see that yesterday was so refreshing, because it was literally players getting back to basics, but also not just a basic. They were playing at, what, 8s and 9s out of 10, where they, you know, they've been playing the sort of 5s and 6s and making these awful errors as well. So it was that, and I think as well, you when you're at the game, I don't know, and especially the way you said, Dan, the way it was, so the atmosphere was great. I need to get home and have a little look at it again, because you get so involved in it. It felt like the first half, I thought we started really, really well. And then apart from maybe 10 minutes spell, where City had a couple of chances.
Just before half-time. They were great 32-42 City, exactly. That sort of period.
And it was almost, I was thinking, you know, actually, just get in here. Just get in here. Yeah. And I was laughing with Phil coming in, because obviously we almost made another error, didn't we, on 45, that, you know, potentially could have given a chance to City. But it, like you said, it was building blocks. And then to come out second half, there was, you never ever felt that... It was a really good game of football. You're watching it knowing that City could hurt you at any point, but also we started creating chances, we started looking more threatening, and the crowd got up, etc. So it, looking at it, you know, again, when I got home, to, it was nice to see that, you know, what I felt in the ground, it was reciprocated on the pitch.
Before we bring Gutman in to do petty rivalries and spite, Phil, it is worth saying it was a really good game of football. All about space, from both sides all the way through the game, where you can find it, where you're going to allow it, where you're going to try and get tight, making decisions. I thought both sides, you know, I'm watching the game, and one of the things that just sort of hit me whilst I'm watching it is, as often happens between these two sides, this is the finest sort of exponents of this game that we're all obsessed with, that we go everywhere to watch, that we've watched all of our lives. These are the best ones. They're just the best ones. And it's mind-boggling. I think that's part of why City and Guardiola get so wrapped up in it. It isn't just the crowd, but the crowd's there for them as well. It's this idea, I think, for him, that this is the pinnacle of his sport, this game. And I think you got to see that from both sides.
Yeah, it feels like he's sort of coming to Anfield to try and complete football in a way, and he's not being able to do it yet. Like a Guardiola team, bar the obvious game that doesn't really count. And in all honesty, I actually think one of the worst things they've probably ever done was win that game of football without anyone in Anfield, because it's now it must be playing on the mind more that they've gone, well, we can do it when there's no one here. But then you put 55,000 people in the ground and our heads go and his head goes and everything works that way. But it is like it's the pinnacle of everything for him, and it means so much to him. And his head just, he's spanned. Like, watching that yesterday, it felt like he just watched Brighton and went, Brighton were good the other week, weren't they? And that's why he's gone in with a back three and a box midfield and high wingers and stuff. And it's that felt a bit mad to me, that was his approach, when he could have just gone, I've got some amazing footballers here at Manchester City. Why don't I just play like Manchester City play? And it's like the whole thing is just in his head and doesn't really help him. But these are two of the best teams. There's 30 excellent players, isn't there, really? We can... Yep. Just say 11 or 22 or whatever, but there's way more than that when you take into consideration everybody and the subs that come on and the subs that didn't come on, the players that aren't in squads. Two of the best managers. It's an incredible... It feels like when... I mean, remember sort of 10, 15 years ago when Barcelona and Real Madrid used to play... They were playing every 5 minutes. I think they played four Clásicos in about 12 days at one point, and you were watching it and you were like, this is amazing. These two teams are unbelievable. The tactics are incredible. The football's incredible. Everything about them is just incredible. And that's the position we're in now with these two teams. And all right, we've stuttered to start the season. And that's one of the things that was great about yesterday, is that you're able to look at it and go, no, right, hang on. We are still good, because it was about being good. We weren't lucky. We weren't fortunate in any way, shape or form. We worked for it. We tactically set up correctly. The footballers played brilliantly well. And everything about it was just right.
The more things change, the more things stay the same. This is one of my takeaways from it. The game itself really reminded me of football matches between 2005, 2010, between Liverpool, Chelsea, Manchester United, when these sides play each other. You know, there was aspects of the winner that was very Fernando Torres, or very, you know, very Owen under Houllier, or very Ian Rush. And this is the really weird thing. You know, Liverpool end up with something that looks like a 4-4-2, Rob. Like, you're watching the peak of the sport. But it genuinely reminded me of the peaks of the sport as we've seen gone back, in terms of even the speed it's played at. Yeah, it's now played unbelievably quickly. Yeah, it's technically unreal. But the ebb and flow was just classic football in the whole game. And it was a pleasure to be there.
Yeah, we were saying at half time when we were breathless. We go, this has been a hell of a game of football. Which one of you just said we were looking, really wanted half time to come quite quickly?
I did. It was him, but I did as well. I agree.
Completely. I did. I thought we'd been the better team in the first half, but I really wanted it to come quickly. Because I suppose I thought, if we're to win this, we need to win it in a window. And in the time we do score it, I think we scored it 5 minutes earlier. That could have been a lot more graft than it was. Do you know what I mean? It was just about... I'd like to have scored it 5 minutes later.
It was like the Brighton game the other week when we scored 3-2. The whole ground was like, that's about 35 minutes too early.
Yeah. It was about right. I mean, look, we went into it with all the bases loaded against us, most of them of our own making. So to put it all right again in one afternoon, in many ways, it was set up for us to do that. I was actually quietly... I didn't want to say the words... out loud to anyone, really. But
no, you were. I was with you before the match. You were very. No, you didn't say it, but you were very confident. You just emanated positivity, calm. You liked the team. You know what I mean? You were very confident, I thought. Like, I was thinking, if these are like Gutman, we'll be fine today.
To an extent, I thought it was a bit of a free hit. We were talking about, I thought we were really excellent against Rangers. And the main thing about the excellence against Rangers was the Salah hat-trick. At the end of the day, City are, if you take Haaland out of City this season, they're okay. Right, they're not even top with Haaland. If you take Haaland out of it, they're okay. And the story around them isn't quite what it is. He's gilded their lily and then some. Salah has always gilded our lily for us by being the best player in the world a year ago, and against Rangers for 6 minutes he looked the best player in the world again. And I thought, it's not gone. Sometimes with great footballers, it's gone and it never comes back. But that doesn't just come back in 6 minutes in the way it came back against Rangers. And I thought, that's why I was a bit more relaxed. I thought, look, he is the spirit of modern Liverpool. Well, you need great... Look, we've got a lot of great players, but the greatest one dipping off as far... And let's be right, he's been... Shite is not the right.
He's not been good in front. I think his general football's actually been pretty good, but he's not been good in front and around goal. And
he's created a lot.
Yeah. If we'd signed him... And if we'd signed that footballer in end of February, and that footballer we've seen between then and now, you've got, he's decent. He's really decent. World top 15, 20? No, nowhere near that. But he's a decent footballer. Yeah, as I said, he's not even been world top 50, really, the last 6 months. And then he had catapults himself back to world's number one in two games, quite frankly, because he was better than Haaland yesterday. He was better than anybody. He was amazing yesterday. So that's part of why I was relaxed going into it, because I could see that coming back. Didn't mean we were definitely going to win. But you'd said in all the previews, just don't do anything daft. Nothing daft was done. Joe Gomez slightly slices one in the last minute, I think, and we go, oh, shit. But even then, it's still miles in the sky.
40 yards from goal as well.
Yeah. So we rediscovered who we are. The truth is, Man City are the best team in the world. But 8 weeks ago, when we did them 3-1 in the Charity Shield, we were the best team in the world. So it's not that surprising for us to leapfrog back to being the best team in the world. Now you've just referenced all those great goals of yesteryear. A lot of them are sort of like number second goals on the count. I was actually thinking about it's Torres and Ngo's goals against Man U in Rafa's last season. Boy, that didn't herald anything good, by the way. It was fucking almost the last hurrah.
We got into the Champions League, basically, 3 days later, didn't we?
Yeah, it was the last hurrah of the Benitez regime, and let's not use that as an augur of things to come. But it can be a reset. Beating Rangers is part one. This is part two. You know, I've not looked at the... I'll shut up in a minute.
It's okay.
But boy, I'm on one. I've not looked at the league table, but
don't worry about it. It's not our business at this
point. I had Talk Sport on this morning, and I did get, and I had to cover my ears. And Liverpool eighth, I think they said eighth. Right, I'm choosing. But what did occur to me? Someone went, Liverpool are 10 points behind City. I thought, well, game in hand, haven't we? Mm-hmm. It's fucking on.
Game in hand's this week as well.
Oh shit!
Wednesday night's just got bigger for you.
Tell you what,
we out now for Wednesday.
we had just over a third of the season to haul back 14 with two games in hand. I'll take 2/3 of a season of that, or more maybe, with 10 points and a game in hand. It's on.
I promised everyone we'd be sober as judges on this show, win, lose or draw, and now we're here.
Gutman's just talking up the title challenge, despite the fact we've won three games all season.
what I'm really juiced about is there's only 8 games till the break now as well, and two of them could be...
It's five league games.
Well, it's Derby County and possibly a dead rubber with Napoli.
I'd like to think that's it. If that's not a dead rubber, we've got a problem.
6 games that count.
Because they are better than Manchester City, yes. The best team in the world.
Six games and hardly any players left, but you know it's going to be fun, isn't it? Or interesting anyway.
It is going to be. I mean, we'll come on to the players in terms of who's left and who's gone, who are going to miss Phil, but I'll come back around to you on the main fella first and foremost. It's another incredible goal in a massive game. I think this is part of the thing that needs to be said about him, that he is a scorer of great goals, but he is also a scorer of great goals in great games, and that is quite rare, really, when you stop to think about it. The save from the previous effort is tremendous. He was just involved, dangerous. Towards the end of the game, he was organising the pressing attack. You could see him talking to everyone all the way through. You know, it's interesting the way Rob's framed it there, that, you know, about him sort of reclaiming his own greatness. Because for me, yesterday, that's a... you know, he was already obviously a Liverpool great, but for me yesterday that is the performance of a Liverpool great, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, like great players have performances where they can hang the hat on and go, remember how good I was that day. He's able to do that about yesterday. He was absolutely phenomenal. The interesting thing about the goal, I think, is that he learns from the one that Edison saves, because the finish is just completely different. The first one, he's tried to put it in the corner. The second one, he lifts it. Like, I also found it quite interesting that when Nunes went through towards the end, he tried to lift it as well. Like, they'd both gone, hang on, this is how you get past him. Because Nunes does it in the Community Shield as well, doesn't he? So I just thought that was quite interesting, the fact that they're working things out on the pitch in real time and reacting to it. But his intensity was fantastic. The way he kept defenders occupied, he was sort of playing through the middle, but he was, I don't think he was quite playing through the middle. He sort of had license to roam. Like, first half, he was popping up on the left, which isn't something you ever really see about him at all. He pulls left. There was one, I think Jota is out there as well and tries to get the ball over, but doesn't quite get it over. There's the Elliot, where Elliot's sort of caught in two minds about, wasn't really sure what to do, but that's, he's sort of left channel again. And he was very different. He was noticeably much closer to the goal, which is what we've been talking about for quite a while now. And it was nice to see. And he was excellent, wasn't he? His intensity was there. His awareness of where everyone was. The runs were clever. Like the first one on one, the run is just exceptional. The way he pulls off, I think it was it Ake? I think he pulls off someone and he's just suddenly in 15 yards of space, and you're not catching him, are you? The only thing is, could he pass to Jota?
Yeah.
But at the same time, Mohamed Salah's not...
Jota wouldn't pass to him.
The thing is, no one at the time is shouting pass. Yeah. I refuse to believe anybody sees Mohamed Salah in that position and is like, I think you should pass there, mate. Everyone's like, go on, put it in. So it feels a bit one of those retrospective things that...
You look such a chump, by the way, if you blow that squared pass. Yes, you've seen them blown many a time by footballers.
There's loads of people who pass the ball and they're like, why didn't you just shoot? I've seen it with Liverpool players this season. Yeah. There was a Nunes one at Rangers the other night, the first half. I think it was 1-1 at the time, and he squares it and everyone's like, why didn't you just shoot?
And yesterday
it's the other way around. When something bad happens, you want to see the thing that didn't happen.
Of course, yeah.
The goal was pure magic, sort of from start to finish, and every individual moment of it's a thrill. It starts with a free kick for them, and you're quite concerned about it because they've got a 6'4" fellow up front who's brilliant and scores goals all
and
the time.
Kevin De Bruyne on the ball.
And Kevin De Bruyne is the one that's taking it. Yeah. And it's, well, you know, getting towards the latter stages of the game, or certainly the second half of the second half. So you get the sort of, you know, the fear of when they're over the ball, the relief of when he just catches it, and then you're thinking, all right, then, but we just settle again. Oh, hang on. He's booted it really far, has he? And there's a one-on-one happening. And then when he's in that position, you know, you may be thinking, just get your foot on the ball. Get your foot on the ball and then we'll see where we are. See who gets up with you. See if you can turn him or whatever. And then he just does something that I didn't see coming. You know, the shock of it is such a thrill in itself. Joao Cancelo certainly didn't fucking see it coming because he dived in and tried to win the ball. And then from as soon as he turns, I didn't feel it about the first one. I don't know whether it was to do with the angle of the run or maybe the stage of the game, I don't know, or just sort of this emotional ride you've already been through with the passage of play. But with the first one, I was never utterly convinced he was going to score. I wasn't saying he was going to miss either, but I was never convinced. Whereas as soon as he turned, Joao Cancelo, I stood on my chair in the club because the ball was going in the net, and the best goals, always the best goals in any game of football are the ones where the whole ground celebrates before the ball hits the net. And another brilliant example of that, you'd have the Man United one at the beginning of 2020 when he slips it past De Gea and it's just going in the middle of the goal, and everyone knows, I never saw that ball hit the net, I still never have. But it's one of my favourite goals. There's also the one that he scored against Alisson for Roma when he lifted it over him from 20-25 yards out or whatever it was. These are the best kinds of goal, I think, where people don't see it actually go in the goal because you're already going crackers over it. So every moment of it's a thrill, and he's the perfect footballer for those goals because he's got the skill and the technique to pull it off, and also the composure as well, because, you know, having missed the first one, I know everyone's saying that he learned from it and stuff, and that's absolutely correct, but any you know, most other footballers, I think, would probably be more nervous doing the second one because you think, well, he fucking saved the other one. I've got to be absolutely perfect with this finish. And if you try and be utterly perfect with a finish, you can often just put it wide because you're trying to find that tiny portion of the corner that the goalkeeper cannot possibly get to. So for him to have that skill and character in that moment, I think, is amazing. This week watching Liverpool's been fantastic, but this week watching Mohamed Salah play football's been amazing.
I loved what he said afterwards about it. Did you see his interview?
No.
It was a good interview. He said, people went, oh, are you worried? And this is a cliched question, and the answer's a cliche, but somehow, knowing Mo, you know what he means. He said, were you worried? Oh, did it affect you? You missed it for the next one. He went, and he did say, no, and it meant I'm getting chances. It meant if that happened, and actually it's how I felt as a fan at that point. I hadn't thought we were actually going to win that game. I thought we could have a really good draw here until the moment he missed the first one. I think at the back, subconsciously, I felt we could win this. This game is open enough. They're vulnerable enough now. And I think Salah felt they're vulnerable enough, so he wasn't concerned by that. And lo and behold, he gets one, a really good chance about 2 minutes afterwards, doesn't he? Before, so that's what I thought, that insight. I know it's obvious, but when you hear a proper goal predator say, that's what I need, I smelt blood at that moment. You saw it as failure, I saw it as blood.
Do you know what I enjoy as well? Because you said, when he turns Cancelo, I'm in the Anfield Road, and he's turned him, so I'm right behind him. And that almost like, he's not going to miss this. Have you seen the clip from the camera?
Guardiola.
And Guardiola drops to his knees as he turns, can't you? Robert's brilliant.
Oh, he's literally, basically.
So it's from the main
stand. Send it
me. Classic Guardiola on his knees, heads and hands. Almost at Anfield.
As he turns, Cancelo. Not as he's a pro. As he turns, Cancelo, he literally drops to his knees because it's almost like you said there, Dan. He knows that Mo's going to put this in the back of the net.
Trying it.
Brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. Wow. Yeah. And again, as you say there, Dan, to see Mo back to his full, like what we expect from Mo, is brilliant. And I think, like, as you said, about going into the game yesterday, you think if you've got Mo firing like that, then these next run of games and you know can be the little catalyst to push you further up.
Just on that, in the wider context, what we were saying before about the crowd, the great thing about the one he misses, the goalkeeper's getting treatment, it should have been a corner. And by the way, that if they'd have scored from that, if that had been given, you'd be absolutely livid because it should have been a corner at the other end and it comes from the same passage of play. But everyone sang his name afterwards, and there was an element to that as well. Yeah. And he just stood there, and I thought it was dead interesting, but he was just standing there looking. Like, I think in his own mind, he was going, this is what I'm going to do next time. There's going to be a next time, and this is what I'm going to do next time. As we come through this, the other thing I loved was the celebration's just so cool. I love it when he's in that space. Where I just love, like, at some point, someone's got to ask him, what do you see? Did you ever think you'd see that in your life? You know what I mean? Growing up in Egypt, he gets to see all these predominantly men going absolutely mad behind a goal in the northwest of England between two teams in the north. Like, I just love that. Like, what does he see? What does he take in those moments? I absolutely would love just someone to ask him that.
Almost like a barbarian horde.
Yeah, he stares right at
it. They're not going to kill you.
He loves looking at it.
All his great goals, he does that.
Yeah.
You know, the Chelsea one that he scores from 30 yards or whatever, puts in the top corner. He does the sort of yoga move. Yeah. He's still just standing and looking. The one at Southampton where he rips his top off and just looks back at us all like, I'm looking at you, but have you fucking seen me? It feels like, in a celebration, he sort of builds up this dynamic of like,
what about
I love what you're doing, but did you get on that? And I think that's brilliant. You know, obviously it's brilliant when they all celebrate together and stuff like that, but I love the way he does that when he knows he's done something amazing.
Yeah.
Because he likes to watch everybody react to the amazing thing that he's done. And you know, I've made the point a few times this season about like all of us often feeling really knackered going the match and stuff because of last season, and I think that they've felt the same, because in the grand scheme of things, I don't think that the way emotionally footballers experience football is that different to what a fan that goes everywhere experiences as well. Because, yes, they're the ones actually kicking the ball and they're the ones that are physically knackered at the end of the day and stuff. But they still feel either devastated or elated at the end of a game of football, at the end of a pattern of a game of football. So I think a lot of the reason Liverpool have not started very well this season is that they're knackered in a very similar way to what we are off the course of, you know, all of the matches last season. But that works both ways, in that, you know, when they come to the end of their careers or the end of their lives, the things that they will look back on as the biggest moments of their lives, the things that they want to remember sort of the sensations of, are the same things that we want to remember the sensations of. And him doing this is the prime example of that to me. This is sort of his way of being like, I remember the goal. I remember the bit where it lifted over Edison or scored whatever. But I really want to remember this.
Yeah, that's so what I'm just going to well. Stand. That's what I think he's doing.
Really
yeah.
still, and I'm going to make this a memory in the same way that. A lot of the things that I will remember as the happiest I've ever been are bits where Mohamed Salah kicked the ball in the net. And he's obviously a totally fucking different person and well more successful than me. But we'll both, when we're grey and old, remember the same things, the same moments, just he stood on the pitch looking at me and everyone else, whereas I'm looking at him kicking in the goal. And I think that's really powerful and great.
I think there's also an aspect of the modern footballer. I think he knows damn well how iconic he looks when he's doing that kind of thing. I think he's still being Mohamed. There's two parts of being Mohamed Salah, having emerged into the body and the personality he's become. There is to put in doing the thing he does, dribbling around people and scoring the goal, but it is also the thing he's doing. It is part of his performance, that. I know it's natural in some senses, but in other senses, he reminds me of Cantona, who was probably the first I can remember who just did that, I'm going to stick my chest out. In a bit more of a cartoon way, Cantona did it. But I think it's part of it. I think he knows what he's doing. I don't think he's not lost in the moment, because I'm not saying he sits at home and practices in front of the mirror exactly, but he is aware that the project of being Mohamed Salah involves everything. That's absolutely wonderful.
No, he's a fucking rock star.
Yeah,
it's like watching Beyonce.
What I mean. Yeah, he's a rock star.
No, I've said that. I remember going right the way back to the pre-season tour in 2018 that I was on, and he was just warming up. And when he was getting ready to come on in the United States, it was like Beyonce was coming on. The reaction of everyone to him, and I'm banging into it. I am in favour of him being Beyonce.
Mums and nans that don't like football love Mohamed Salah. Because he kicks the ball in the goal and he smiles an awful lot, and he seems really cool and really nice.
Yeah.
And he's probably genuinely one of the most popular people in the world. If you tallied it up somehow, I don't know how you'd get the data, but he probably is.
Yeah,
he feels there's a responsibility to be iconic after scoring a goal, to look fantastic after scoring. He knows that's part of his responsibility to his wider package, and that's cool as fuck.
Best player you've ever seen play for Liverpool? I'm going to ask each of you that.
You ask me on a morning after he's just...
Yeah, that's the point, that's the point.
No, but but I can't think of any better. So he will deal on that.
What I mean,
he's as good as peak John Barnes. Suarez is a different conversation.
So joint best.
Yeah, joint best. Okay. Yeah,
best player you've ever seen play for Liverpool.
Yes, unquestionably, he's the most joy, the most thrill. He's given me the most. He's scored the most ratio wise. Just by far the best.
Paul,
I'd say yes. But I mean, and I think sometimes to be there and watch Luis Suarez play football sometimes was incredible, because the things he did on the pitch. However, I'm with you, Dan, because I think he's given me that joy, because Suarez was great, but then Mo scored goals that's won us trophies and got us to where we are now. So, yeah, I'm going to say Mo.
I think he's behind Suarez. But it's very close.
But what I'm saying, this is 5 years. I
agree completely. But Suarez also played with Ali Sissoko and Joe Allen, and some footballers who wouldn't get into Liverpool's 25-man Premier League squad were playing 30 games a season, and we nearly won the league. Like it's different. Yep. It's different measures. I
think he's the best Liverpool player of the last 10 years. Notwithstanding a cameo season from Luis Suarez. I think that's fair to say that in the wide scheme of things, because, I mean, this is a whole other show. We should do a show like this again.
Someone used to host something called The Greatest and didn't want to do it anymore.
that was good, though.
It was a good show, wasn't it? Yeah. There's only so often you can agree that Luis Suarez had the greatest 6 months in Liverpool.
Just to point out, they're both... they're amazing. It's a pleasure to have a choice between those two footballers.
The reason why he fucked the greatest off was it just wasn't getting the attention from the awards committees that he gave. the team, then, there's big calls in there, Paul, I'd say first and foremost from the manager. You know, he goes Elliot over Henderson. He goes some combination of forwards, either Firmino or Jota over Nunez. He's forced into making a big call at right back. That ultimately, the extent to which, if I say it doesn't let him down, that understates the it could be, we might have watched last night, we talked about, we have not seen Mo Salah's last great Liverpool goal. we may well have seen James Milner's last great performance. And I don't mean that damningly, like he's not going to do that again. It's more, how many more times does he get on the pitch on a game of that magnitude? And he leaves it all out there. It is an incredible James Milner performance.
Yeah, and do you know what? I think what's mad about, and every single person who supports Liverpool is entitled to an opinion, and I've got no problem with that. But it's when these people have these massive meltdowns. If we sat around here 20 minutes before the game yesterday and we said, right, who are you going to play at right back? Are you going to bring Nat Phillips in at centre half and play Joe Gomez right back? Yeah. For me, I'd have said no. And this is not having a personal attack at Nat Phillips. I just didn't want to see him up against Haaland and anyone else. So then you can have, the counter argument is that, okay, well, you're going to play Milner against Phil Foden, one of the best, you know, left sided players in the league.
Boss.
But then it's a decision the manager's got to make, and you can have a different in opinions. You might have said, I'll go with Phillips and Gomez. Okay, fine, that's okay. There's no need for the meltdowns what people have. And ultimately, we've got to trust in one man. And whether I agree with him or not, it doesn't matter what I think. He's going to make the call. And for him to make that call, I thought personally it was the right call. I thought, because for me, you know what you're going to get from Milner.
It was the only decision.
It wasn't, to be honest. I don't even think there was a debate.
Insane to think you'd put Nat Phillips
exactly,
into that.
Exactly, Rob. You know what I mean?
But
there's a lot of people who, you know, go crazy because you're playing a 37-year-old right back against Phil Foden.
37-year-old who's been at the highest level of the game.
Totally. And that's why,
for nearly 20 years.
It was a no-brainer. And then I was so pleased that he did the performance he did. You know, not to show... I couldn't give him... Damn about the idiot who wanted to call him out. I was just pleased for me as a fan, for the team, and for every Red who was made up after that game to walk away and go, well done, James Milner. You were part of a fantastic team performance that's just beat Man City.
What I thought was great about him is that they were at times genuinely targeting him. There was a few times, certainly first half, where they were just throwing blind balls up in his general direction for him to deal with. And the idea was that, well, maybe Foden will get there first, or there's a second ball, and all of a sudden you've got him. Yeah, he might win the header, but the second man might push up, and all of a sudden they've got two men on him, and they can create an angle, and they can get in and play Haaland in at the back post. And he dealt so well with every single bit of targeting. Gomez really helped him as well in terms of how he backed him up, and he was tight to him. There was a good graphic on, I think it might have been
Harvey
Match of the Day last
lot,
yes, it did. There was a good graphic on Match of the Day when it was looked like the right back and the right sided centre back, and the left back and the left sided centre back were almost defending together and leaving like a big gap between them. So we stopped the ball getting into the gap as opposed to having get the ball out of the gap. Yeah. And I thought everything they did was excellent. The ability to sort of know he's a weakness, which he was. We can all praise him for whatever we want, but you looked at that team and you knew that was the Liverpool's weak spot was there. We all knew that. It's not being unfair on anyone. It's not criticism. It's just a statement of fact, really, isn't it? That was where Liverpool were weak. Yeah, that was where Liverpool were weak. That was where they were going to target, where they should target, and how we handled it. And we handled it brilliantly.
I thought he was superb. His positioning all day long was pristine for the vast majority of the game. He's playing against a player that's not just superb, but has been in utterly excellent form because of how obviously superb Haaland has been. People haven't mentioned Foden as much, but he's most certainly gone up a notch so far this season from what was already an excellent player. The fact that obviously Liverpool have really struggled in the majority of games so far this season, and in the grand scheme of things, everyone's played quite poorly, but an awful lot of people pick sort of favourites to say really terrible things about, but also to declare off finished. As though over the course of a summer they've just become unable to kick a ball or have lost all sense of any fitness or stamina that they may have had. And I think Milner, there are probably five or six players that people have said that about, but Milner more than anybody, just sheerly on the basis of his age, not on the basis of his performances, because it's not like he's been playing and has been unable to run. If he's playing and was unable to run in some of these games, then you might go, all right, yeah, if he can't run any more than sound. But people picked him out as finished. You know, towards the back end of last season, which again still isn't that long ago, he was absolutely excellent at Southampton, playing at the base of midfield as the six, but he doesn't play very often for Liverpool.
Newcastle came on, too, wasn't
and then he came right back second half at Southampton.
He came on at Fulham and was actually really good. Like people sort of credit Nunes for changing that game. It was James Milner that was the significant change in the way that Liverpool were playing from midfield out. He's still all of the Liverpool players that people have been slating over the past couple of months individually. If you're slating a performance, it's fine, because they play crap in loads of games, absolutely fine. But to declare any Liverpool player over the course of the last couple of months finished was incorrect and disrespectful. And a couple of them that played right back and centre half yesterday proved that wrong. Every player that plays for Liverpool, including people that haven't even played so far this season, like Chamberlain and Keita, remain excellent footballers. They're in the Liverpool squad for a reason, and they've been brilliant for Liverpool loads of times in the past, and all of them will be brilliant for Liverpool again in the future. Maybe not all the time, and maybe, you know, if you'd ask me right now, I would probably say that next summer is the right time to let Chamberlain and Keita leave, for example. But I'm still convinced that there'll be a game in January where Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain scores twice or something, or just plays great, and Keita will as well, even though these are not necessarily players I would pick to play for Liverpool in another couple of years or 3 years' time. So the idea that just because Liverpool have had a really poor start, that some of them are finished and have always been crap and have got these glaring weaknesses about them, just simply isn't true. It can just be the case that everyone's having a bit of a rough time, and that they're still great and they're still the same people and the same players they were before. And I was so pleased that those two in particular demonstrated it in abundance yesterday, and an awful lot of people had to sit and watch that and celebrate the result, but then will have at some point afterwards thought, fucking hell, went a bit early there, didn't I? Always a bit of a dickhead there. And yes you were, and I do hope that those people have realised that. And you know what, both of them might play on Wednesday again in the same positions and be poor, and they might be a fault for a goal or something, fine, that sort of thing will happen, but the idea that they're bad footballers or shouldn't be playing for Liverpool or should be disrespected for playing for Liverpool is incorrect, and I hope that performance is a sort of change in people's attitude on things like that.
I think it's interesting the contrast between the use of the old and the new in with Liverpool this season and how it emerged yesterday. I'm thinking Harvey Elliott and Milner's partnership to a degree.
Yeah,
I think Klopp's learning things. If you'd rewound a month even, I'd say we're playing City, we'll have Henderson, Thiago and Fabinho fully fit for that game. What's his midfield? They go Henderson, Thiago, Fabinho. A lot of people did say that before yesterday. I didn't think it would be. I think Klopp was asked some questions in the summer. Well, he made a comment about how he saw, which gave me the impression that he actually thought keeping the same core 11 together week in, week out into their dotage might be more of a thing than he previously thought. He talked about, he compared great sports team football teams to Federer. He was, just look how he just manages to know what he's doing into his ripe old age. I thought, you're implying that you really want your oldies to grow old together and can remain elite for another 3 years as a Federer-like football team. I think a few things happened this season have opened his eyes a little bit, and I think he realises that maybe he needs youth and legs. Now, he's not throwing the old out, but I thought that was a signpost yesterday by putting a young, a cultish 19-year-old into that kind of game. Fucking hell, in a wide position as well. And for one of his, not his first, but one of his early, if that was one of his first changes to bring Carvalho into the mix, shows that he thinks the veteran Federer-like qualities married to youthful vigour, that maybe that's the way forward.
Yeah, I also think that I think the formation is now the formation. I think the 4-3-3 is gone now. I think
4-4-2.
Yeah, well,
I think it's a hybrid, though.
I think it's 4-2-3-1. I think it's 4-2-3-1. He can say it's 4-4-2, but there's no way that Mohamed Salah's playing on the same level when he plays wide right as Fabinho and Thiago, is that it's a two-man midfield. And then it's a striker, and then it's three people buzzing about. And in fairness, whoever's playing up front quite often drifts wide. You've seen it with Nunes, and he's done it. You've seen it with Salah as well. You saw it yesterday. That, to me, and it looks like it's probably a better use of the players we've got as well, because I think I remember the first day of the season we play Fulham away, and he starts Thiago, Henderson and Fabinho, and it just doesn't look like a midfield to play against Fulham, because it's not got the sort of the fourth man you need to help you with the other three attackers. Whereas this one, it feels like it's the best use of the players we've got. I think it's a formation that suits Firmino a lot more, because he can play as sort of slightly withdrawn, and he's got three men in front of him. That really helps him. I think he's really struggled this season with only having sort of a man either side of him. And he's obviously got no pace to go in behind, and it just makes the whole thing easier to defend against. But when he's got sort of Nunes or Salah or Jota in front of him, he gets more space on the ball. He gets more people to pass the ball to. He gets more space for them to be in, and that's much more beneficial to him. But even the midfields, like Elliot, I thought looked far more comfortable playing slightly further forward, linking with the attackers, as opposed to sort of being a third midfielder who really had to be thinking about the defensive work, which is not something that's natural to him and not something that he's had as a part of his game for, you know, the first sort of 3 years of being a professional footballer at this level, and even his youth career before that, because I'm pretty sure watching Harvey Elliott play for Fulham under 15s was be like watching it for, like, Haaland style alien, because he must have just been so much better than anybody else at his age level that he mustn't have just had to do anything really, he just had to play, go and play football. And now he's got to come in, he's got to think about what he's doing. When he's further forward, he's linking up with people, it's a lot easier for him. But then,
but defensively, he only has to think about his fullback.
Exactly, exactly. But there's also other players, like I think Chamberlain would fit in that front four quite well. I think Keita would fit in the two. I think Curtis Jones can probably do both. I think there might be, with the injuries, there might be a bit of Curtis Jones left side, which is
agreed, totally
what
agreed.
You saw a lot of him when he was.
There'll be some Chamberlain left side 19. As well.
There could be. It depends how long these. Depends how long Jota and Diaz are both out for.
But he's going to run out of time, I think, Chamberlain.
Yeah, possibly. But there's going to be someone. There's a vacancy on that left now for the next few weeks, and someone's going to have to fill it. And maybe it's Carvalho.
It could well be Carvalho in there as well. Paul, in general, the defensive work, we've, you know, mentioned Milner there. Dan's mentioned Gomez. But Virgil's best game of the season by some distance. Back at it, having Robertson back made a difference. The goalkeeper's been mentioned in terms of his offensive play, but also just in general a sense of calm. But they defended as a team, and that's the key thing as well, because the way they play, it's all about creating space the whole time. Everyone pitched in, and everyone pitched in brilliantly.
Everyone's, you know, mentioned different players and systems. I think it was just seemed to be one of those games where everything that Klopp wanted and we wanted as fans, we got. So the system they played, you know, as you say there, Rob, there was Milner is not going to get forward as much as Trent. Well, that's obviously it's a given. But he still managed to get forward a couple of times in the first half. But you've got Elliot then, who I think does look more free, because he's not going to be worried that, oh, if I go too far forward and Trent's gone past me, are we going to be, you know, exposed there? So it just seemed that in all positions, We worked together. They had each other's backs as well, didn't they? There was so many times, you know, you felt that, you know, if the game wasn't going in a certain way, it'd look at, you know, there's been some arguments at Man United. We go back to the, you know, Milner and Van Dijk having made with each other. It didn't seem like that yesterday. It seemed like it was a collective. And also, we mentioned, it seemed that from the crowd as well, we were together with them. And then when you see Virgil then come in and perform as he did, I mean, it was, you know, the head of clearance from you know, in the last maybe 5 minutes, that is Virgil at his best. He sees the danger, you know, buffer him there. It's a tapping for Haaland. It was lovely to see, because obviously, you know, we as a centre-half, they like to get that one in. it's great. And Joe Gomez as well. I think what Gomez needs to do now, and Virgil, and probably all of us, the big thing is this consistency. And we mightn't get that same level on Wednesday against West Ham, but definitely a bit more of a consistent level. Joe Gomez was fantastic. And if you can do that again, and Virgil can replicate that, then we should be okay.
Yeah, I thought Virgil was great. You and I had a conversation in the pub with Ayel on us about, I was standing up for Virgil. I was saying, I can't remember exactly what I said, but I think
you made some big shouts, but that's like,
I know. But I sort of felt, of all the problems we've had this season, despite the fact that he has, you know, you pointed out he'd given away a pen or two, he hasn't been the problem. I think everything going wrong around him doesn't make anyone look good, especially a defender who's going to be there at the scene of the crime. But he was so composed yesterday. And, you know, it was a reminder that him and Gomez is a partnership, you know. It's not a new thing, this. Mm. They want us a league together. And, you know, we're blessed with these riches. I hope Konate's not got a bad injury. He was meant to be only
borderline.
Doesn't
sound like it.
Meant to be only borderline. We could do with that, but Virgil was so good.
Mm. The manager spent, like, the last month or 6 weeks saying that the team needs to be better at defending. That's what, whenever he's asked about why Liverpool are playing poorly, it's what he's sort of always gone to as a stock answer. But at no point when he was saying that did he say the defenders need to play better, or the defence needs to play, or we need to do something with the defence, or anything along those lines. He said we need to defend better, the defending needs to be better. And I thought that the big difference between yesterday and Arsenal last week, for example, is that the front line made us really difficult to play through. At Arsenal, for example, that first goal happens, and I know that it's technically offside and stuff, but they make two very simple passes to men in loads of space under zero pressure, and suddenly it's like a 4-on-4, basically. And 4-on-4 is really hard to defend against, even if all of those four that are playing for you are at the top of the game. Someone can just play a really good pass and score. This time, though, the intensity from those front four, if we're calling them that, and from the two centre midfielders, was so much better. And obviously all of the defenders and the goalkeeper played brilliantly, but their lives were made much easier by the fact that everybody in front of them was on it and was restricting space, as you were saying, but was tracking runners.
I think they picked the moments really well. So
it wasn't
we're just going to be intense and get after everything. They were just,
we're fitter this week. They were smarter this week, and it was like so if someone's on the ball and they are in space, the right man went and closed them down.
Exactly.
Rather
than
it being the wrong man and then suddenly there's a gap further up the pitch. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's been going on so far throughout the season. The Arsenal game was the sort of pinnacle or the trough, I suppose, of that last week.
Nadia.
Where Jesus Christ, you know, when Liverpool were going forward, they were doing good things, but a lot of it looked tough. It looked like hard work to make it happen. Mm-hmm. A lot of when Arsenal were going forward just looked like it was so easy to be on the edge of Liverpool's box. And that was everybody in front of the defence's fault. Everybody that was on the pitch at any point, including a couple of them, even Diaz played quite well before he went off. It was still his fault, you know, as a collective. Whereas this time it was everybody's collective, fortitude and smartness and strength that they were stopping the ball getting into Haaland. You know, the week before that as well, the amount of times that Brighton just played a very simple ball down the middle of the pitch for Danny Welbeck to hold up or try and spin someone, and suddenly it's like, well, Trossard's in. How's that happened? And Liverpool was so much better as a collective defensively yesterday from the very front, so that Manchester City just couldn't move up the pitch. And the tactically things that they did where they, you know, made themselves an awful lot less effective as well. So that's a part of it. But Liverpool were just so much smarter, so much more intense, and as we said a number of times, just backed each other up loads more and believed in themselves as a unit, and that now has to be, you know, it would be foolish to sort of think that this now means that Liverpool are just brilliant and are just going to start winning every week.
Absolutely.
Again.
Absolutely.
But that idea of them all defending collectively and smartly has to be the foundation for everything that they do from now on.
I thought the key was the centre mids. If you look against Arsenal, kind of goals we're conceding on the counter there, you've basically got runners into the half space and forwards pushed up against the centre halves, so we're totally outnumbered. The centre mids were in a tight box with our centre backs in the half space. And that was necessity being the mother of invention there, because you left that space open for City's type of attacking, and the way they flood forward, you'd have been 3-0 down within 10-15 minutes. That, so we were still able to maintain our line to a degree, but that four stuck together the whole time. That enabled us to catch them in a mesh every time. And if you looked at when we got the ball out of that, we then seemed to play most of our forwards then in the other half space. They were all in the 10 position, more or less. Well, I suppose that's what happens in a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-2-1-3 or whatever you want to call it.
Just saying numbers three, there. Right?
Just saying numbers. The manager getting himself sent off. For me, Phil, it feels a little bit like a culmination. And listen, you know, he himself said, listen, I was out of order after the match.
What did he do?
He absolutely goes berserk at the linesman and the fourth official.
Gets sent off, flips in the middle finger.
And then he flips in the middle finger.
I saw that.
He was right in the linesman's face as the game was going on. Yeah. And the linesman was running. He ran alongside him and was millimetres from his face.
Oh, right, okay.
It was a warranted sending.
Yes.
It was a warranted sending off, and he cops for it. But the thing I think about it, and the thing I think he should be discussing, or whoever does the next press conference, because it wouldn't surprise me if he sends Linders out, if he's not going to take the game himself because he's sent off and suspended for it. But the thing that should be discussed is that the fouls on Salah are mad. Like, fouls on the fouls that aren't given on Salah are insane. And I'm at the end of my tether for it. To actually see the one that doesn't get given, when you see it back, you can understand why the manager's absolutely gone off his barnet. Because there's something like that every half, it feels like to me. And I don't know quite what's happened in these referee meetings. I'm not saying it's some sort of grand conspiracy, but they have said in the past, they do talk about what they do or don't give to certain players, behaviour to certain players. I think Salah is very physical. He backs in. He creates the physical contact a lot of the time himself, and I think that's a good thing.
Does it for the goal?
He does it for the
backs
goal.
Backs in, spun a man.
Just about to make a point about the goal, actually. I think part of why he does what he does for the goal is because he knows he's not getting a free kick. He knows there's no chance that João Cancelo is going to defend him physically, and he knows that there is zero chance of the referee giving a free kick, so he has to get the other side of him and get the ball the other side of him. It's incredible how he does it, but I think so much of that is him thinking, do you know what?
I get nothing.
I'll lose the ball here. So if I don't quite get this turn right and I'll lose it anyway, I'm net the same. Same position, but it's outrageous. There was one first half as well, I think, near sort of where I sit, and I just looked at it. And I was like, what's he got to do to get a free kick? It's insane. I've heard referees say that they'll, like, prepare for games by looking at players and
That's ridiculous.
Which is, as a concept, is insane, because you're not supposed to referee based on a preconception. You're supposed to referee based on what you see happening in front of you.
Yep.
And the idea that the linesman's worse than the referee for me for that one, because the linesman
is
2 yards away. He's 2 yards away.
Yeah. No one was in any doubt about Jürgen Klopp though was a fault.
He's 2 yards away, and he just doesn't give it. He's basically, Bernardo Silva is hanging off his back, and then he ends up on the floor and he drags him down. It's the most obvious foul I think I've probably ever seen. Like, I can't think, like, he may as well have two-footed him in the head and it wouldn't be any more of a foul.
There's been an awful lot of praise so far this season from predominantly from old men who preferred football in the 1960s and 70s, who think that this idea of the referees letting the game flow is a really good thing and a sign of great progress. I don't understand the concept, and I'm not even particularly using this as an example, I'm just talking generally. I don't understand the concept of allowing blatant fouls to go unpunished as, well, the game's getting better. Like, that makes fucking zero sense. It's absolutely also, zero sense. It's in every game. Every game you see someone just get pulled back and a referee just sort of shrugs his shoulders. It's like, but you know it's a foul. There was a lot of praise for yesterday saying, oh, well, it's good that they let the game go and then VAR gave the foul. Just fucking give it. If it's a foul, give the foul. Yeah. It was a play. You can see Taylor go,
get up. Hmm? Get up. Like, he'd just gone down. And it's like, he pulls him down.
And that was my worry as well, because it was such a blatant foul. And we know how egotistical these referees are. There was I don't know if it was confirmed, but someone was saying that the other week, Michael Oliver absolutely rollocked because someone who was of a lesser official had said, oh, you might want to come and have a look at it. And
now, he was at Nottingham Forest, wasn't it? Was it Forest Bournemouth?
I think it was. Now, so when Taylor does that, I kick off with the ball, goes in the net. It was right in front of me. I didn't know whether Alisson did have two hands on it. But for me, I was kicking off at the foul because it was a blatant foul. My worry was, Phil, was that the fella might say to him, and it comes up obviously on the screen that VAR's looking at it, but my worry was that he was too egotistical that he'd just go, no. And that was my worry. So what you just said there, Dan, give the foul in the first place. It's a blatant foul.
I'm devil's advocate on this one.
The old man.
I knew that card
would be played, but I'm still.
Happy birthday, Phil.
I'm still going to put my chin out.
Go on.
Right. When I saw it in real time, and when I've seen it back in real time, it's such a blur. Let's put it this way: I can see. Yeah, maybe that's what I thought. Anthony Taylor, and Guardiola said this, had set a template for so much goes free, right? I quite like the idea in the sense that in modern football, we let borderline offsides go because we can always sort it out afterwards with VAR. I'm quite happy if we err on the side of letting shit go with the knowledge that if anything proper happens, that we do have recourse. In a sense, that was the system
The recourse, Rob, just to clarify, the recourse has seen Jürgen Klopp sent off.
No, but...
Well...
But, so, it has. So, it literally has.
So, using this as an example, but I'm not even using this particular foul, properly. It's loads of other stuff. But if we say then, for example, that Manchester City didn't score from that move, but did get a corner and then scored corner... Then that was meant
the offside
thing. Then
though.
That was meant that a blatant foul was allowed to get go, was allowed to let go just because people don't want it to be blown up as much.
What I don't know though is because no one's going to watch every. He let that game flow like a motherfucker. He definitely, the number of times I was in the first half in particular, I went, whoa, he's letting go. In our favour, at least as much as in their favour.
So if you're saying things like borderline things, then all right, but when there's a blatant foul and in loads of other games, not involving Liverpool, there are loads of other games this season where blatant fouls just don't get given because of this sort of mantra that they've been told of you must let the game flow at any cost.
The problem with the letting borderline things go is that at some point you will miss blatant fouls like the Salah one on Bernardo,
unless VAR then intervenes.
But how's VAR
given up the goal?
It didn't give us a free kick for the Salah one.
And the manager's now sent off and has to watch it in the. I don't even think he can watch in the stand on Wednesday night. I think the manager basically has to watch.
All right,
he's allowed in the dressing room, and that's about it. Apparently,
clearly.
Yeah, I can't remember what it is exactly, but he's not allowed on the touchline.
He should try and get a ticket, or the friends and family system's a fucking nightmare. So that might not work.
He's got a Liverpool postcode, he's got one of the £9 ones.
Yeah.
In terms of denying that goal, by the way, there's three reasons to deny it. One, it was a corner.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It was absolutely 100% a corner. Two, there's the foul. And three, it is taken. Alisson definitely has the ball. If they were going to... I read somewhere that that would have been given, that one. So it's just treble reason. Mm. We're over-worrying about the central reason, the middle one, because it's all weak. That's my only point is, if you give me a universe whereby there's a really low threshold for giving a foul and they're given for any kind of contact or even a shirt being touched... I'd rather live in a world which is 20% higher threshold. Than
quick,
that,
Phil. The three things really makes me laugh from Guardiola. Sort of, this is Anfield point, as if like the goal was disallowed by VAR because this is Anfield. But this is Anfield didn't cause the referee to give a corner, didn't give him to give the initial foul, and he didn't blow up when the goalkeeper had two hands on the ball. Mm. But you know,
this is Anfield.
The VAR isn't in Anfield. He's in fucking stock, you know, wherever they are these days.
He's in an industrial estate.
But Guardiola is
this is Stockley Park. Yeah.
We're rounding this off. Guardiola is so funny. He sleeps in a Liverpool duvet. So this is Anfield sign above his bedroom door, so he taps it on the way out every single morning. He's got one of those stadium shirts that everyone had in 2005 where the stadium's wrapped around on it. It's good to see, to be quite honest with you. Maybe he's on My Friends and Family, and we can box Guardiola off for a ticket on Wednesday night because he hasn't got a game himself, as Manchester City don't play Arsenal this week, which is a bit of a shame at the moment. But you know, if he wants to get boxed off, he knows where I am, and we'll see what we can do. Other thing, quickly, because I want to move on to other bits and pieces, it was very good to see Liverpool issue the statement that they issued around the chanting from the Manchester City supporters. We'll be discussing that a little bit more, I suspect, over the period of time that is the World Cup, focusing on the games at the minute as we go. But it was a really strong statement from Liverpool, and it would be nice if the BBC didn't just take private softball quotes back from Manchester City, and instead either said, if you want your side of the story being put your name to it and issue a statement, or jog on at this stage of proceedings. But you know, I'm not writing for the BBC, somebody else is. There's Panorama tonight though on good BBC news. Dan, you've contributed to it about everything that went on in Paris back towards the back end of May. There's also a publication of Phil Scraton's independent report into everything, having taken witness statements as well. It's back with momentum around discussion on Paris.
Yes, which is really good, because it shouldn't be going away. There should be consequences for those that were responsible, and there should be changes in the way that big sporting events like that are organised, so that the same thing or worse doesn't happen again in the future. I would encourage people, obviously, to watch the Panorama, and probably more importantly, actually, to tell other people that you know do not support Liverpool to watch the Panorama. Obviously, everyone that went to the game, if you feel like you can watch it and stuff, should do. But you will already know an awful lot of the information if you've been following it and stuff like that. The important thing is that the people who have power to make decisions and make changes, and also the people who decided that they didn't give a shit, or decided that it was Liverpool supporters' fault, but who are affected by it and would be affected by it if the same thing happens at the Champions League final next year, say, watch it and recognise that the gravity of what happened, the reasons for what happened, and also the consequences of it going forward. A girl called Layla Wright has put it together. She works for company called Mindhouse, which is Louis Theroux's production company. So we had a chat. She's from Liverpool and used to work for Radio City, so I know her from that. So we had a chat sort of in June about you know, whether a film about it would be a good thing to do. And since then, her and some very other talented people have gone away and made this film, basically. And it's a telling of you know, the supporter story of what happened. It includes an awful lot of Phil Scraton, that everybody that listens to this will know is a brilliant human being. It includes a lot of his work that he's been doing for months and months with the help of some other very good people too. So it will be, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm sure that it will be very thorough. I'm sure that the people that watch it who went to the match will be pleased that it's a helpful and accurate representation of what happened. But also everybody needs to continue to work on it in order to make sure that there are consequences. You know, there was a brilliant French Senate report that was done after their investigation. It was great. It exonerated everybody from a football supporters perspective. It put the blame in the right places, and then nothing really happened because the French government went sound and then just ignored it, like it didn't happen. The UEFA panel investigation is going on in the background as well. I met with them the other week. A lot of other people in Liverpool met with them as well. Spiritus Shankly did, Liverpool Football Club did. They were going to Madrid the week or the week after that to do the same thing with various people from Madrid. The people on that are really good and empathetic. They're good people, and I'm pretty sure that they'll do good work. But again, what UEFA do with that report is entirely up in the air. So people will need to put pressure on UEFA to do good things with that report when it comes out, whenever it is. I believe it will be the back end of November, but that could change. Basically, things are still happening in the background. This is now in the foreground, this programme, very much show live on BBC One at 8 p.m. But things are going on, and if you can do things to help by watching things, reading things, sharing things, telling people to watch, share and read things, then you should do so. Because it's really important.
Okay, do that. Next week, on Saturday, we are in the Keynes Brewery Pub in the Baltic, in the Keynes Brewery Village. The Keynes Brewery Pub to watch Nottingham Forest versus Liverpool. So there'll be a few of us there. It would be lovely if you could make it and join us for that. Really looking forward to it. And then underneath in the basement afterwards, we're going to be doing post-match pint in front of an audience for the first time. We're going to try and see if we can do audience participation. This is very much a trial run. It's not ticketed. We're not charging anything for it. We're just having a little dipping our toe into the water. They're really good people down at the Keynes Brewery Pub. Got on really well with them, trying to sort of organise all of this and pull it together. We're all just seeing if this works. So it's very suck it and see. So if you want to be part of a grand experiment that might fail miserably, come to the Keynes Brewery Pub to see Nottingham Forest versus Liverpool, and then downstairs to do post-match pint. We're all in it together, and with a bit of luck, it will work. But if it doesn't, well. It's Forest away. You know, we need to get back into a mentality of it's Forest away. That's the aim of all of this. Apologies if you're having issues with the app last night. Do download the app, but apologies if you're having issues with the app last night. There were different issues, but that's no consolation to you than the ones that there have been. Is my reading of it. But anyway, hopefully not normal service will be resumed. Slightly better than normal service will be resumed. But we'll manage all of our expectations together and move forward. Very, very quickly then, because we've been going for a while. 8 minutes max we've got left. West Ham United come to Anfield. Rob Gutman, pick me a team. Pick me a team. I was always going to come to you.
I'm going to think on my feet here. I think it's particularly useful in this phase where we're losing players to injuries again, that the five subs rule applies. So I can see certain people starting with a view to him having preordained them coming off on 60. Trent, who was a surprise inclusion yesterday, came on a sub, and I think he'll start against West Ham. Whether he'll be brought off for someone like James Milner on 60, just so he doesn't overexert, might be a thing. Similar could be said of Andy Robbo, who played his first start after his injury, and I expect him to start, and Shimikas to possibly replace him at some point. Centre-backs, think Konate, if he wasn't ready for that fella, yesterday's one wouldn't be risky, even if he was nearly ready, and Gomez and Van Dijk.
Might just make the bench,
yeah,
or something.
Might make the bench, yeah, Virgil and Van Dijk. Midfield, I think my guess is if he's going to want to stick with the formation despite depleted resources, and I think Fabinho stays in and Henderson comes in and Thiago goes to the bench. So it's getting trickier. I could see Carvalho left, Elliot right, Salah and Nunes forwards ish all moving around on that one, with viewed that he has good bench options. Firmino to come off the bench, Thiago to come off the bench. I expect Nunes to start and Salah will start.
I would agree.
Carvalho could come in as well.
Completely agree on that. I think he was front four: Firmino, Salah, Nunes.
Not you think Firmino
Elliot.
Starts?
I think he starts them. I just think you can.
Who plays left then? Nunes.
Firmino. I think he plays Firmino off the left.
Okay, like that.
But there'll be a bit of Nunes out there as well, because I think one thing that Nunes has done is he pulls left in it.
Well, yeah.
I would do something similar, I think. Maybe actually tell Nunes to start on the left and just see how it goes, because I think
the
bits of play when he's been at his best, he's sort of cutting in from the left. So just try it and see what happens, because we need someone to do it for the next few weeks.
The only reason not to do it, I would say, is that West Ham have basically been playing four fullbacks because they've got no centre-backs. Mm-hmm. So a 6'2" physical centre forward who can get in behind might be a really good idea to sort of exploit the fact that they're playing a left back and a right back at centre back.
I get that, but I still, after the past week, just like the idea of Mohamed Salah being
I agree completely.
Also, Nunes was so weird yesterday. He's just the weirdest footballer I've ever seen. There are points where I think he's really good, and then there are others where it looks like he's never played a game of football before. It's so strange.
He is raw.
He really wanted to score as well, I think that was in his head that he wanted to.
But I'd play him. You know, there are a few other options at this stage. But he is doing some good things. So try and play him and tell him to do more of them, yeah. I suppose.
Good coaching tip from Dan.
I think, yeah, I totally agree with everyone's been said. We'll definitely maybe go with Nunes on the left, just to obviously make sure we keep more central. I think that's the probably the most correct thing to do. I think as well, it'd just be nice, whoever they pick, it just, you know, a bit more of that consistency. We saw it yesterday where everyone was at like an 8 or 9 out of 10. If we can have another game like that, then I think we should be absolutely fine against West Ham.
It'll probably be something like he picks Henderson instead of Fabinho for this, and then Henderson and Fabinho on the weekend or something like that, because he's got three really to play those positions at the minute, hasn't he? And there's a lot of games very quickly.
How many Thiago played on the bounce now?
He didn't play at Rangers.
Oh, did he not? Okay.
And then we've got Ajax next midweek.
But they'll all have to do a lot of games, so I think he might just change one per match and trust them all.
Yeah. That's what I think he might do. I think also the bench is significant, not just from the idea of getting them off, Rob, but I think also there's a chance that maybe Chamberlain might make the bench. It'd be nice to see him get a bit of time on the pitch.
Jones as well.
Jones is really important, I think, in this as well. It'd be good to see Jones get on the pitch and go from there. We all feel very better about the world. Listen, thank you very much indeed, firstly, for sticking with us through this, all the way through, and hopefully this may prove to be a turning point. But let's not get carried away. It is all about baby steps, and I promised you before this started we will be sober as judges. See you later. Sports Social Podcast Network.